Okay. Jerry, we don't have an attorney in here for us? Let's roll quickly then. Good. All right. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. It's approximately 2:50 on Wednesday, September 11th. That we're meeting for a, what are we going to call this thing here?
Informal hearing.
An informal hearing. We're meeting for an informal hearing on case number PU 13-272 and PU 13-273, dealing with a proposed 345 KV line from Ellendale to the South Dakota border. It's the North Dakota portion of a much larger project that MDU and Otter Tail will be stakeholders in. We've announced this as a request to the public. Anyone requesting a formal hearing had until August 19th to do so. This time we hadn't received any requests for formal hearings, so it's appropriate to do this in informal. I don't have any opening comments, but I would turn it over to my colleagues if they would have any.
I have none either.
I don't have opening comments.
All right, thank you. Let's go around the room and take appearances, if you will.
I'm Henry Ford with Montana Dakota Utilities. I'm Director of Transmission Engineering.
Okay.
Jason Wires with Otter Tail Power Company. I am the Manager of Delivery Planning.
Okay. And from PSC staff?
Jerry Leon.
Jerry Leon. All right. Folks in the back row want to identify themselves or anticipating? All right, if you speak, just say who you are, okay? All right, fair enough. I think at this point it's probably Henry or Jason. Which one of you would like to start out? All right, Jason, it's your case.
All right, thank you, Commissioner Kalk. And thanks for the opportunity to come in this afternoon and talk about the project.
Maybe you should scoot that mic up and point it towards your mouth because they don't seem to be picking up very well today.
All right.
There you go.
All right. This afternoon, I'll talk about the evolution of the project through the various studies that have been done that ultimately identified this project, and then Henry will walk into some of the scheduling discussion with the past accomplishments we've had and some of the future milestones that we see. Starting first with a project overview, this will be a joint project between Otter Tail and Montana Dakota Utilities. The endpoints will be a new 345 kV substation near Ellendale, as well as a new 345 kV substation near Big Stone. As you can see on the map, it kind of winds in generally a kind of an east-west to north-south configuration with a total distance of approximately 160 to 170 miles. Of that total length, there'll be approximately 10 miles of this line in North Dakota. The ownership arrangements for the line are going to be 50-50 between Otter Tail and Montana Dakota Utilities, with MDU also owning the Ellendale substation and Otter Tail owning the Big Stone South substation near Big Stone City.
Jason, was that always the mix of 50-50 Otter Tail and MDU? I thought at one time there was other partners considered, or maybe not.
Yeah.
It's always your guys' line. Okay.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
The total project cost is expected to be between $293 million and $370 million, and that's subject to our final route determination, final engineering studies, and where the design ultimately ends up. And at this point in time, we're anticipating the line will be energized in 2019 timeframe. The concept of a new 345 line from Ellendale to Big Stone has actually shown up in quite a few studies in the past. And on this slide, you'll see my first reference dating back to 2003. But after reading Jerry's memo, it reminded me of actually studies done prior to that time. It was the Lignite Vision 21 studies in the 2000-2001 timeframe, which were largely sponsored in part by the Upper Great Plains Transmission Coalition. After the completion of those studies, we've seen MISO pick up the efforts in 2003 with what they call their Northwest Exploratory Study. And you'll see from the map on the left-hand side here that one of the transmission plans identified through this study was for basically two 345 kV projects from the Dakotas into the Minnesota region, one of which resembles very closely the Big Stone to Ellendale project. In the 2004-2005 timeframe, the CapEx 2020 folks did a study of serving the load within their footprint. And what you'll see in the middle graphic there, is that conceptual transmission plan that was developed by the CapEx 2020 utilities. And this plan was really identified to determine what plan is needed to serve the load within this region. The studies that were done in the early 2000s really focused more on a sub-regional basis, looking at a 3 to 4 state area. In 2008, we've seen the MISO studies actually ramp up with more of a broader regional look. In the 2008 timeframe, the MISO initiated the study of the regional generator outlet. And what this study focused on was identifying a transmission plan to deliver the lowest cost energy into the MISO footprint. The RGUS study was actually performed by MISO, but had a lot of interaction by the Upper Midwest Transmission Development Initiative. As you may be aware, the UMTDI was a state initiative of governors, governor staff, and commissioners and their associated staff. And these folks were very instrumental in developing a multi-state collaborative. Among the success of that effort was former State Commissioner Clark, as well as Jerry Lean, and also Sandy Tabor as well. Among the RGOS study was, again, three transmission portfolios developed, and what MISO did at the conclusion of the RGOS study was look for commonalities between the three transmission suggestions that came out of that study, and they took the commonalities and formed what they called their MVP projects. In 2010, they started the study of the MVP projects and studied those in more detail, looking at several technical aspects of those projects. The objective of the MVP study, again starting in 2010, was to identify a transmission portfolio that enables the MISO states to meet the renewable energy mandates and also the criteria of the MVP projects. The outcome of those efforts was a set of 17 different transmission plans that formed MISO's first MVP portfolio. This portfolio was presented to the MISO board in 2011, in December of 2011, and approved by the board with a total cost of around $5.2 billion.
I have to ask the question on the objective. I view more weight in the second half of your statement that the MISO MVP projects, you know, how they, the other criteria they have, but you're talking about renewable energy mandates. How much would you weight that factor as the justification for this line, since North Dakota has no mandates?
The RGUS study efforts looked at both objectives and mandates within the MISO footprint. The MVP study efforts actually looked at just the mandates within the MISO footprint.
Right. That's probably a question for a rate case down the road, I guess, more than citing, but okay. Thank you.
Well, I think what you're saying is, if there's two criteria, one of them the energy mandate, the renewable energy mandates, and the other the criteria of MISO MVP projects, how much of a driver for this is simply renewable energy mandates?
Yeah,
helping states meet their renewable energy mandates.
That was a big driver in the RGOS process. And it was serving load as well, but serving load that met the renewable portfolio standards in these states was a big objective of them, and we just happened to have the generation that they needed, and so these lines get that generation into those states.
So this provides value to North Dakota in other ways.
Yeah.
Because the renewable energy mandates isn't a trigger for us because we don't have them.
It helps us with the reliability and losses and things like that in our transmission system, but in addition to that, it increases our export capacity.
And I'll have some details on those in a future slide here. Now, the cost allocation of the MVPs was actually approved within the MISO tariff. Cost allocation is across the MISO footprint, so the revenue requirements associated with these MVPs will be recovered by all the loads within the MISO footprint. So what this means for North Dakota customers is that Otter Tail and MDU customers will only pay for a combined total of about 0.81% of the total portfolio cost. And this was part of the MISO tariff. Okay, here we get into some of the benefits on the Big Stone South Allendale project. And what I've done here is I've captured some excerpts from various MISO studies. Some of these are verbatim from some of the study work, and then others are paraphrased from some other MISO study reports. Benefits were quantified both for the project itself and then also on the entire portfolio of projects. Starting first with the benefits directly from the Big Stone South Allendale project, the new 345 kV outlet will remove the overloads on existing 230 kV and 115 kV facilities in the Allendale area. Now, these particular constraints have shown up in previous MISO interconnection studies for wind projects in the Allendale area. Now, this project should remove some of these constraints and foster the development of additional wind in the region. Secondly, the Big Stone South Allendale project will reliably move renewable energy to major 345 kV hubs in MISO, to points further south and east. So the project will help wind development happen in some of the best wind capacity factor areas within MISO.
Now, you're talking a lot about wind, but it will allow the export of all energy.
Correct. Yeah. And it gets into the third bullet there. You know, traditionally or historically, North Dakota has had more generation than load, and exporting that power out of the state has been a constraint in the past. This particular line with, you know, in combination with other local lines will help that situation of being able to increase the transmission capacity to get that additional generation out of the state.
Yep. Be it gas or coal-fired or whatever it is, we couldn't get it out before, and this is going to help.
Correct. Yep.
Open up that jam. Okay.
Does that still hold the same importance as it did a few years ago when we're looking at northwest North Dakota, looking at a severe shortage of power? Do we need to get our power out of the state anymore? Maybe we just need to turn it around.
Yeah, I can say from my past experience looking at what the flows have been out of the North Dakota region, they have definitely decreased in the past because of the additional load in the western Minnesota or western North Dakota area. And it's certainly decreasing. The exports are decreasing as the load is picking up in the western part. But who's to say that additional generation wouldn't be developed in this region in the near future?
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. The last bullet here talks about some of the benefits of the portfolio in general, and this is really capturing the benefits from all 17 projects across the entire MISO footprint. As Jerry alluded to, we'll see reduced transmission line losses. We'll see reduced planning and operating reserves. The need for additional reserves will be going down because we'll be relieving congestion on the transmission system, making it more efficient for generation to get transferred from one region to another.
So if you, just so I understand that, when we're setting a level for the planning reserves, you have to account for how readily you can get it. So if you have better transmission, they don't require you to have as high of a reserve?
Yeah, if we can reduce congestion on the transmission system, it's easier for us to share that generation on the reserves.
Oh, okay.
And then just give us those numbers again, just so we get it on this informal record. Because it drops like 5% or something. It's pretty big, isn't it?
I'll have to look in the study here. I think it was primarily focused on some of those benefits on the operating side were more on the eastern side of MISO footprint. I think Indiana was one of the zones that was potentially eliminated on the operating reserve side. But I could reference the MISO MVP study to find that number from the planning side.
For North Dakota.
I think it might have been quantified MISO-wide rather than...
You have zones for reliability in MISO, and our zone is North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota, and all the way over into Wisconsin.
Yep.
We're in like zone one, and so the whole area, region that we have, the same reserve requirements.
Mm.
But if you don't participate in RTO, it's much higher than if you do participate.
Correct.
Yep.
Who sets those standards?
That is set by the Regional Transmission Organization. So MISO does studies looking at what type of resources are needed in terms of what they call an LOLE number, a loss of load expectation. They shoot for a target of 1 day in 10 years, and they do a study to determine the amount of reserves needed to meet the criteria of a 1 day in 10-year shortage of generation.
Okay.
And I can see if I can look into the report maybe a little after here and sure. find the impacts to North Dakota if they're quantified here. The overall portfolio will also reduce the investment needed for wind generation. Again, exploiting those high wind capacity factor areas will allow us to get more energy at a lower cost. And lastly, reduce transmission investment. Building these MVP projects will avoid future reliability projects that may have already been identified in future years. And with that, I'll hand it over to Henry to talk about project schedule, some of the past activities we've done, and then some of the upcoming steps we see for the project.
Yeah, Jason, you know, gave you kind of the whys of the project, you know, why it's needed, and I guess what I'd like to do is just kind of give you an update on how the project has been proceeding, what steps we've taken so far in the project, where we're at. So this project schedule that you can see right now on the screen, you can see that we're right here in this 2012-14 area where our concentration right now is on environmental review and permitting. So obviously we're working forward with our application for North Dakota for the corridor and route permits. And so some of the things that we've done, you know, MISO basically gave us the endpoints. They told us from Ellendale to Big Stone. Our goal then is to try to find a route that would fit between those two endpoints. So in order to get there, first, you know, we identify a study area, and then within that study area, working with our consultants, we identified corridor options, and I can show you in just a minute here what some of those look like. So we held some public open house meetings relative to the corridors just to get public input on those. And then later, once we had trimmed down the corridors and identified preferred routes or potential routes, we had a second round of public input here or meetings to gather that input on what the routes were. That pretty well led us then to the point of what is our proposed route today. Of course, also during that whole process, you know, we met with all the agencies that would be involved, the SHPOs, TIPO, Army Corps of Engineers, all the various agencies that we're going to need to work with to get this project permitted and sited. So this next slide here shows you in kind of orange the box that we considered our study area when we first started out. So point one is Ellendale, point two is the Big Stone South substation location. So the kind of the bluish-green rectangles and so forth, those are the corridors that we identified initially as the options of how we could get from essentially point one to point two. We then took that information out to these public open house meetings. And in general, we had six open house meetings. In North Dakota, we had a public meeting in Ellendale. These were held October 15th through the 18th of 2012. So this was our first kind of opportunity to get public feedback on the project and on the routes. The other locations you can see are all in South Dakota, but total of six locations kind of scattered throughout the corridor areas. And you can see that we mailed out 8,582 landowner notification postcards. There was 206 attendees total among those six open house meetings. I believe in Ellendale we were somewhere in that roughly 50 number of interested landowners that came in. And then there were some comment cards that were received as a result of that. Of course, there was a lot of face-to-face comments that we gathered from the landowners, information we got from the landowners on, you know, maybe why a certain corridor wouldn't be as preferable as another corridor and that type of thing. So we went from the October 2012 set of meetings, took that feedback we got from them, came back to work with our consultants and tried to narrow those down. This map now shows you really what was our final two route and corridor options from a general standpoint. There are still, you can see within there are still some kind of sub-route options also. But once we came to this conclusion, we went out and had a second round of these public open house meetings, and you can see that we still have, we're down to five now, but we still have the one in Ellendale. So we met with a lot of the same people in the Ellendale area. And you can see still in North Dakota at that time, we had one route that would take you straight south, basically out of Ellendale, into South Dakota. The second route option would have gone east, essentially, of Ellendale, and then turned south, you know, north of Britton. So we had two corridor options within the state at that time. So five open house meetings, you know, over 5,000 landowner notifications, 336 attendees. So we had more attendees in the second round of open house meetings than we did in the first. Even though there was fewer open house meetings, you know, we were now concentrating on a more defined area. There was more comment forms submitted, 67 mapping comments, and those are just the comments that we garnered from landowners meeting with them face-to-face in these meetings and looking at the maps together and taking their comments down essentially on the map. You know, this landowner that lives in this location had this kind of a comment to make. So that was in February of this year, towards the end of February, 25th through the 27th, that we had that second round then of public open house.
Can you hold on
meetings.
To this slide for a second, Henry?
Mm-hmm.
So if I could ask the question, why was the South Dakota route preferred over the North Dakota route, if you will, what would be the answer to that question?
Between these two?
Well, no, and we sorted out with a route that initially would have run through southern North Dakota over to the interstate and then dropped down.
Yep.
And then basically, as this thing's whittled back, now we basically have a route that's almost all in South Dakota. So not that I want to do more hearings in North Dakota for power lines, but why wasn't the North Dakota route the preferred route, if you will?
Really, overall, it's not a simple answer. It's a combination of all of the route criteria items that were used, you know, things like the location of wetlands, the location of archaeological sites, the, you know, what type of water crossings did we have in there, the density of population, you know, trying to site this line as best as we can away from any occupied homes. So kind of all of those factors, initial feedback we got from SHPO and TIPO offices, all of those things kind of came to point us more in this direction than that direction. So it's not like there's any particular reason I can point to and say this was in the way, so we couldn't go there.
Does it have how much effect does it have? I don't know the South Dakota, you know, who's the MDU customers down there, Otter Tail, but does this route better go through your traditional service areas for MDU and Otter Tail?
Not for MDU, because Ellendale is pretty much the east end of our service territory from an electric standpoint.
Okay.
So I know Otter Tail, you guys have some customers in a few of the communities in this South Dakota area. The other thing I should say is that really the route we've ultimately chosen here turns out to be the shortest route of the options that we were looking at.
So
there's cost impacts there, although, you know, that wasn't necessarily the only ruling criteria.
But the for customers' benefit, it does it really matter whether the route was southern North Dakota or where it's at right now? The customers get the same benefit where the line would go.
Yeah.
Okay. And then refresh my memory, maybe Jerry jump in here a little bit. We're doing the PCNN today, but we're not going to be doing any siting hearings on this potential 10 miles, or how are we envisioning that to play out? Will this PCNN suffice the siting?
No.
I can't remember how this is going to play out.
We are working on our application right now for siting both the Ellendale substation and the 10 miles of line in North Dakota. We're expecting, right now our goal is that application will be filed in North Dakota on October 4th, roughly.
But didn't the previous commission, which I was part of then, too, have some discussion about having an abbreviated process because of the shortness of the route, or is that a separate discussion we should have, Jerry? I'm just trying to put it all back straight in my head here.
I don't think so. I mean,
okay.
We'll have to probably go to Ellendale for a hearing.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Because maybe it was a different line that I thought there was somewhere where we'd looked at. Because 10 miles is more than we can exempt, if you will, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But the issues on a 10-mile power line are much different than the issues in a 200-mile power line. Okay. So, all right. Fair enough. We'll see how that plays out.
I think what Jerry meant to say was we'll probably get to have the opportunity to go to Ellendale for a hearing. But getting back to Commissioner Kalk's questions regarding the general routes, I don't remember whether they're called property taxes or something else, but the annual tax that you pay on a mile of power line, how does it compare between North Dakota and South Dakota on a 345?
You know, we pulled some tax data together. I can't recall how they differ. Do you have any idea? Yeah.
Would you get us that information?
In North Dakota, I believe the way their structure is, it does kind of sunsets or drops to a minimal value after a certain period of time. After 5 years or something, I think it drops to some more fixed amount.
But it is a centrally assessed number in North Dakota. It's not up to the whim of the county, I don't believe.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you could get that comparison, I'd like to know.
Yeah. Yeah, we did pull that information together as part of our application. So.
Okay. All right. So tell me again when you're thinking of filing this siting application?
October 4th.
October 4th. That's very precise. All right.
That's their goal.
Time.
That's a Friday.
All right. Fair enough.
In the morning or afternoon?
We'd probably ask Jerry what they prefer. Our goal would be to have it ready to file probably that morning.
Okay.
This slide just shows you what our typical tangent structure is going to look like on this line. I think when we've come before you before, we've had a couple of structure options. Typically for a line like this, there's the option to build what we call an H-frame, which is a two-pole structure with the big cross arm and generally the X-bracing in between. Those type of structures can be less expensive, but they have a lot more impact on the land, particularly on agriculture. These structures, and whether they're H-frame or whether they're what we call monopole, either of those probably would have been a steel structure. But we have decided, kind of based a lot on landowner comments as well as some of the design criteria analysis that our consultants performed, that the steel monopole structure is probably going to work out best on this line. It's going to give us a little more flexibility on the routing as well as on the spanning. A lot of the area that we are crossing through is fairly wet, a lot of fairly wetland areas. These are all set on concrete foundations. So every one of these structures will have a 6 or 7 foot diameter concrete foundation that's going to go down about 30 feet or so. These are going to be weathering, more than likely weathering steel, which is that brownish steel. They're not the real shiny galvanized steel. But they will look like basically like this. Twisted pair conductor probably doesn't necessarily mean anything to you or doesn't need to mean anything to you, but it is what we're building here is a two-conductor bundle. Each conductor is this twisted pair. There's some advantages to twisted pair from a reliability standpoint. It also actually has a better cross-sectional area from an avian perspective.
Birds.
Yeah.
Right.
So fish and wildlife tend to kind of like that, although that's not the reason we chose this. The easements we're looking for out here will be 150-foot wide easements, 75 feet on either side of the center line of the structures. So, and you can kind of see in the lower right-hand corner the average heights of the structures, little information on foundation diameters, general span length 7 to about 1,200 feet, roughly 5 to 6 structures per mile.
Where's the laydown lot going to be? Is there going to be a big one in North Dakota? And then we'll get into that later. But, I mean, I'm assuming you'd have a big laydown in North Dakota to start with and then work your way around.
Yeah, there will be a laydown site in North Dakota. I think we had...
How far apart are they going to be was a better question, maybe.
5 to 6 per mile.
The lots, though.
The laydown areas?
Yeah.
I think they were like 30 miles apart. Roughly 15 miles, either way from a laydown site.
Okay, thanks.
I want to say there was like 5 of them for the whole line. Does that ring a bell, Jason?
Sure.
Yeah. So, and none of those sites have been chosen yet.
Sure.
We haven't started that process at this time.
What percent of the easements do you already have, or haven't you done that yet either?
Well, what we're doing is we have begun talking to landowners. Our first step right now is getting easement options. Because the line isn't, fully designed, and until we've talked to a lot of the landowners, we're not sure if the center line is fixed or not.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going out to the landowners based on the proposed center line that you've seen, and we're asking for 500-foot wide options. First off, to kind of gauge the acceptance of the landowners of the project.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, to just see if this whole area, this 500-foot wide area, would be acceptable. That'll give us then some ability to adjust the center line as needed. So we're doing these options, which are, like I say, more general. But we are making an option payment, which is a fixed payment per parcel. And so that just gives us kind of this general agreement that they will support giving us an easement when we get to that point. So we have, right now we've identified 434 parcels throughout the line. In Dickey County, there's 37. So we have 37, roughly, landowners in North Dakota.
For 10 miles?
That we've got to deal with.
And that was the best route you could find?
Actually was, yeah. So we've started that process. We have actually contacted a dozen of those North Dakota landowners so far to date. We do have one option already signed. Usually the process is you get together with the landowner, you spend a couple hours with them kind of explaining the project, explaining our easement payment methodology that we're going to use on the project, try to answer as many of their questions as we can at that time. Then we leave them the whole package. We leave them the easement form, the option form. We leave all these documents with them to review, you know, take to their attorneys if they want to. Then we come back, you know, a week later or so, and sit down with them again, see if they have any additional questions or just where they stand. And so some cases landowners are ready to sign the option at that point. Some cases they have more questions. And so it's an iterative process. Our main goal was to make contact, at least that first initial contact, with every landowner on the project, both North and South Dakota, before, say, mid-October. So there's 9 or 10 land agents out in the field right now, distributed throughout the project, that are making these contacts with all these landowners.
So do you have a goal in mind or an expectation? By the time we would get to a point, if this were granted, of expecting a route and corridor approval, of what percentage of the landowner easements you would have in place?
For North Dakota, I guess we have a fairly strong goal or high expectation that we could have all or most secured in North Dakota before then, being as we've already initiated those contacts, and so we've already got that process rolling. You know, we don't know yet, of course, when the hearings would be, but I wouldn't say that we will have the easement signed, but we will have options signed. So we will have essentially the landowner support for the corridor and probably the preferred route that we've chosen. That makes sense?
I'm trying to figure out exactly what that means, though. If a landowner signs that, as long as you end up placing it on that corridor, that landowner has committed then to granting the easement, the price is worked out,
yes,
that it will be somewhere in there.
Yep.
You just have to go back and formally narrow down exactly where it will
Correct.
Be.
Correct. Because what happens is at that option stage, we don't know exactly where the center line will be. We don't know exactly where the structures will be. We're paying for these easements on a acreage basis, not on a per structure basis. So even so, we still don't know for sure at the option phase how many acres of a right-of-way we're going to need. We have a pretty good idea. And as part of the easement or option negotiations, we're giving them that information that based on, you know, what we're seeing for our design today, you would have roughly this many acres of your land impacted. Based on what we actually did in this project is we did land valuation studies in all of the affected counties. And so we're paying easements based on a per-acre impact, which is the full right-of-way, based on the valuation of the land, you know, based on recent sales, based on the Soil Conservation Service or Farm Bureau or whoever that provides those statistics on
average land values on a per county basis. So we've already completed those studies. We know what the average cost of, say, cropland is in Dickey County, and pasture land or range land is in Dickey County. And so we are able to, at least as a starting point, say, here's what we are willing or offering to pay on a per acre basis for the easement. So before they sign the option, they already have some pretty good idea as to what their payment's going to be.
Okay, thank you.
This is for either of you, but how would you say public necessity is being served by this project?
Do you want to flip to the next slide? Oh, we... It doesn't say how. I think we go back to, and I probably should just let Jason talk, but we've got to go back to the MISO studies and the need and
benefits. Yeah, the benefits slide, which was shown earlier, shows some of the benefits to North Dakota. I think the additional, the ability to integrate more generation in the region, this will strengthen the reliability of the transmission grid. The additional capability for exports out of the region. I think generally those benefits that were quantified on that previous slide is really the stance for how this serves public convenience and necessity.
Do you have any info in terms of how this might help bring power in? You talk a lot about export, but to Randy's point, right now, importing is maybe a bigger issue if we have more generation and are able to. I see the benefit of more exporting longer term. But when we're asked, because not everybody loves these kind of projects, so when we're asked these kind of questions like, why did you approve this? What good is it doing me? Some of that information would be helpful to have. Like, well, it helps bring more power out west to where we're really short, or, you know, so to quantify that information would be helpful.
Yeah, and historically the flows, you know, are typically been out of the Dakotas.
Mm-hmm.
As the load continues to ramp up in western North Dakota, very possible we'll see flows into North Dakota more commonly. So since the occurrence is rare today, I don't think it's gotten a lot of attention from some of these out-year studies, but that's certainly a observation.
Would this be a route that flows would come in through?
So it certainly would be bidirectional.
Yep.
And who are you, Tammy?
Grab
a mic, will you, Tammy?
You know, this is a...
Put your name, say your name again, Tammy.
Tammy Eberly with MDU. This is a bit of a different project. You know, North Dakota has a PCNN process, the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. And in this case, I think that part of the public convenience and necessity is being served because it is two local utilities building this project. This project would be built regardless, really, if we were involved or not. It is a MISO project that is called out on in that MTEMP 11 shall be built. And it's part of that whole portfolio, and it's part of, as the map that Jason and Henry showed, you know, without that link, we have all of those other projects, those 16 other projects to the east of us. This links us with that other 16 pieces of that bigger part. And so part of, you know, what we worked hard to in even South Dakota was to get a PCNN process in place. North Dakota had that process in place to ensure, to better ensure that it was local utilities building that project and that we could ensure that it was done, because it's interconnecting with our systems, done to in an appropriate manner. With regard to costs that go to our customers, So it's just it's a bit of a different project. If we come in with one for a PCNN, we being MDU, we're saying we need it for these reasons. Whereas this, a lot of the need is really part of that whole MISO portfolio that says this project shall be built. And we want to be sure that we're the ones building it for those reasons. So just interject that.
I, of course, have questions for you, Tammy, since you opened it up. Well, let's go down this road a little farther. Okay, so MDU serves all of North Dakota, correct? No, I'm sorry, all of Western North Dakota. For the most part, big footprint. I'm at the Senex Station.
As the IOU.
I'm at the Senex Station.
There's a lot of
I'm at the Senex Station in Williston. You tell me how this project is going to benefit me.
And I think for all of the reasons that Jason and Henry have set forth here and that we've set forth in our applications, reliability, import, export of power, all of those reasons, it strengthens that bulk transmission system, which I think that brings good to all customers.
And I'm not disagreeing with you. I just wanted to get it on record one more time. But could you also walk through the way the MISO cost allocation, that's a key point I think to bring out in this, is that MDU and Otter Tail are not paying for this whole thing. We're paying for a very, very small portion of it. And so that, I think, is where the benefit of it is going, a large benefit is going somewhere else. But they're paying a large cost of it. So what's the cost again for MDU and Otter Tail customers? What was that number? It was like
0.8%. 0.8%. Less than 1% of the cost goes to our customers, and yet we see those benefits of really, again, major is just strengthening the transmission grid, that bulk transmission, which has been a goal of, I believe, all of the why there were all of those studies. For all of those years is how do we strengthen the bulk transmission.
But when we talk to people about that, I think that's a key point, that we're only paying 1% of this cost, and we're going to get a huge benefit for it because of the integrated system.
Yes, and quite on, we'd pay that 1% whether we built it or somebody else built it.
Absolutely, and that goes back
to... So we want to get to, for this case, which we're just looking at the certificate of need, we want to make sure that it is... the two local IOUs building that project.
Which we've fought for under right of first refusal forever.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I knew Tammy couldn't go a whole informal without talking. It just wasn't going to happen. We appreciate your input. All right. So where were we at here?
We're almost basically done.
Okay.
You covered these already.
Yeah.
Okay, commissioners, any other questions for the company? Randy?
I don't
think so.
Okay, would you offer up all your information for the record?
This?
Yes. I need one of you to say that.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll receive all that information. Jerry, do you have anything you'd like to add from the staff?
No, you have the memo that I did that kind of summarizes it a little bit. I would add, going back to the beginnings of this, back in around 2000, as Jason was saying, the big push then was to try and get another coal plant in the coal field or two. And so Governor Hovind's office put together the Upper Great Plains Transmission Coalition. And in that, there was a study, a consultant was hired, Black and Veatch, to figure out what it would take to expand the coal fields up there. And their answer was basically 2 345 kV transmission lines from the coal field to Minneapolis. One of them would go through Fargo, and the other one would go down through the Ellendale area. We got the Fargo one in place from NSP and Otter Tail on the CapEx projects, as far as Fargo anyway. They didn't make it all the way to the coal fields, but they made it, frankly, further than I thought it would. And now this line, combined with the Brookings project and the Brookings to Big Stone MVP lines and this line are that path to Minneapolis in a 345 for Mellondale. Again, we didn't make it to the coal fields, but we're basically seeing that vision come true at this point, even though we're not going to build any more coal field plants at this time. We'll see if that stays that way in the future. But in my mind, the thought that we could get this built for this price, for what it costs us, is amazing.
Back to the 1%, less than 1% yes. North Dakota share.
And this line would never get built if we had to pay for it. And so I just leave it at that.
Okay. Okay.
Commissioner Christman, any questions?
No, other than just to state the fact that I'm still perplexed that there's not more activity going on for trying to plan or prepare for getting more power to Northwest North Dakota when we know that need is there. And to, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something in the explanation of that, but the answer that, well, we're going to just get it off the grid or off the market.
I would do
it
my.
Doesn't seem like a solution to me.
I'll do my best stab at that one, Randy. Is that the MISO planners are well aware now of the needs in Northwest North Dakota, but as we're finding even in North Dakota, how quickly that came up, they're reeling up there as well. They've got their northern area study, and there's some other things that MISO is looking at. So, but it's you're correct. It takes 10 years to get us here, and this was in the board a long time ago. So it's there may be. 5 years from now, there's something else planned going out there.
The other thing I think you need to remember is that of all of that load growth that's occurring up there in the oil fields in northwestern North Dakota, about 90% of that load is co-op.
Yeah.
And, of course, Basin Electric and WAPA are working to get transmission and generation in place in northwestern North Dakota to serve that load. So, you know, we have roughly 10% of that. It's in the communities. And I guess to date, at least, we're finding that primarily what we need is upgrades to our transmission system up there. You know, we have a project, for example, that we're going to build from Kenmare to Lignite, which is just to put in a higher voltage, in this case 115 kV, in order to support the communities that are currently being fed off of our 57 kV system up in that area. So from our perspective, as a MISO member, it isn't so much a lack of power as it is a lack of transmission capacity to move some of that power where it needs to go up there.
But even to extend upon that, I think that's one of the reasons that Basin Electric and WAPA are looking at joining Southwest Power Pool, is that they anticipate they need the ability to move power back and forth. And they did discuss with MISO joining them, and that discussion did not go very well for MISO, if you will. And so it's I think there's a realization that they want to get into a power grid or an RTO, but they just haven't committed to it yet.
We have identified some needs that are laid out in our IRP that we filed in July. So, as Henry, some transmission and even some down-the-road needs and how we're addressing those from a power supply perspective.
Fair point, though.
Okay. Nothing further.
Commissioner?
I have no more questions. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see here. Let's see if we can wrap this up. So this PCN will make a decision on that accordingly. Is there anything else that the company needs to file to you, Jerry? They'll file their proposed order, if you will, and you'll get a look at it. We'll have a work session potentially on it.
Yeah, I don't think we had talked about a proposed order or anything, but I had envisioned just a routine order granting the PCN.
Okay. I don't see any. So you put that together. What's the time frame that you're looking for this, in a month or so or 2 months? Or
I think we had talked about trying to do it for the 25th.
Okay.
if not the 9th for sure, I think.
Well, why don't...
It's getting busy looking here.
Jerry, why don't you put it together for the 25th and get it out to all three of us, and if one of us wants to schedule a work session on it, we will certainly do that, but if not, we could just bring it up for vote, I think, if that sounds reasonable to you two. I just have a couple thoughts on, as we go forward now with this siting, you said October 4th you're going to be filing your request for corridor certificate. Are you able to share if that's going to be a combined request now, or it is? Okay, so then we'll look at combined hearings, and what's the hearing time frame that you're thinking about?
If they get it filed in October, I suppose we're looking at a hearing before Christmas.
Okay. All right, that sounds good to me. Okay, from the company, anything else going once, going twice? Mr. Lane? Commissioners? All right, we'll close the work session on case numbers PU 13272 and PU 13273. Thank you.